Moving on here on the Jefferson Exchange, many of us can only imagine what it was like to serve in the armed forces in a time of war, because many of us simply do not serve in the military anymore. The memories are vivid for the people who do, and those memories are recounted in a series on Southern Oregon Public TV based in Medford. SOPTV produced and is currently airing a second season of My Story of Service, visits with veterans from around the region about their experiences in uniform. This week's installment includes a Rogue Valley man who served in the Air Force during the Cuban Missile Crisis and in Vietnam. Larry Slessler is a retired Air Force captain in the studio with me. Larry, good to have you back on the Exchange.
Oh, thank you, although I'm not this week. It's the 31st for
me. Oh, it's the 31st
for
you. Yes. Okay. I read the schedule wrong, but okay, coming up anyway. And Jeff LeBeau, the producer of My Story of Service, is in the studio as well. Jeff, good to see you again.
Nice to see you, Jeff.
Can you give us the walk-up on the series and its origins?
Well, it started a few years ago when our the president of Southern Oregon Public Television, Mark Stanislavski, kind of asked the question, is how can we better serve our community? And we were thinking, talking, and realized that there was a growing disparity between the civilian world and those who serve compared to years past. And so we started doing some test interviews with some just veterans who would share their story from how they got in through deployment and returning home and their struggles home, and it's just been fascinating.
So, did you cast a fairly wide net in terms of branches of service and periods of history?
Yeah. We've spoken to from World War II, Korea, Desert Storm to today's myriad of conflicts.
Right. Or a bunch, obviously.
But season two is all Vietnam-era veterans. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that it is the, as we move towards the Ken Burns documentary, 10-night, 18-hour documentary series on Vietnam.
Which starts when?
That is, the first night is Sunday, September 17th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you began this just a week ago, My Story of Service Season 2, is that right?
Yeah, with Gary Foster.
Okay. Well, we got Larry Slessler here, though. Let's talk to Larry about your time. How many years in the Air Force?
I did 10, so I really wasn't retired. I just got out.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Or what is the difference? Because I've gotten this before, like ex-Marine versus retired Marine.
Well, there's no such thing as an ex-Marine. They're former Marines, even.
See? Terminology.
Terminology is important. Well, you'd have to do 20 years or more to be retired, unless you were medically retired or some of those other things that can happen also.
Okay. You had a really busy year in 1961, from the sounds of it. I had a chance to look at your feature.
I think you're talking about the when Cuba?
Well, I mean, didn't you get married that year and then get into the service that year?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I graduated from college, got married, and went into the service all in about a four-month period there.
And what did your new wife think about you shipping off to the Air Force?
You know, that's hard to think back. She was 19 and I was 21, and you're young and stupid, and you just do those things. So I honestly don't know.
So, yeah, how tough was basic training, and how much of it did you have before you went off to officer school?
Well, because I had a college degree, I went straight into officer school.
Oh, did you? So no basic?
Well, it's kind of a combined thing, but, you know, I tell people I played football for Fred Spiegelberg, so that sort of prepared me for almost anything, I think. Daily doubles under Fred were fairly significant.
Yeah, legendary football coach at Medford High School. Yeah. So, yeah, I've heard stories about Fred's workouts. Where did you think when you were wrapping up your training that you might end up?
Well, we're talking about early 1962. Mm-hmm. I graduated and got commissioned in February of 62. And frankly, Vietnam or any of that stuff was not on my radar at all. I think the only thing we were kind of concerned with was we had the Cuba thing going because of the famous Bay of Pigs in 61. And Cuba was sort of sucking the air out of the room in the latter part of 62.
So it was a fairly buoyant time in history, it seems like. I mean, other than the setback at Bay of Pigs, I mean, Vietnam was not nearly as big as it was going to be. Korea, years behind us, we were feeling like a superpower.
We were. And, you know, I didn't have Vietnam on my radar at all in 62. None. I didn't even consider it as a place I might end up.
Do you think, in hindsight, if Vietnam had been, I mean, if you'd come along 4 years later, do you think you would have made a very different set of decisions?
I think so. You know, I can remember when I got my orders and I stood on the Bear Creek Bridge on leave before I went with my dad and saying, I'm just not sure this is the best thing for me. And, you know, he was an old German Lutheran. It's, you know, you signed the contract, son. Get your ass over there. Maybe I can't say that on the radio, but
it's
I did.
It's an animal, right?
yeah, it's an animal.
Get that donkey.
Yeah, right. Get that donkey over there.
So, Jeff, I can imagine you've heard some very disparate stories in compiling my story of service for SOPTV that, you know, some stories have had lots of adventure and some have involved people who spent a lot of time at desks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been fascinating, and a lot of I went in, especially with Vietnam. I think there I've had a lot of myths because of pop culture, and then meet one on one with these guys and realize, well, they don't really fit into this category. One that jumps to mind is the I figured everybody I'd talked to would have been like, well, I was drafted. Mm-hmm. Oh, Vietnam, I was drafted. No, at least here locally, the gentleman I've spoken to, all volunteered. And then I started researching that, and it turned out that the numbers I found are 2/3 of the men who served in Vietnam actually volunteered. Mm-hmm. But it was actually 2/3 of the men who served in World War II were drafted. So really? I have been operating completely backwards.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
We're talking about My Story of Service, which is a series of reports on local vets from Southern Oregon Public TV. Jeff LeBeau is the producer of that. Larry Slesler is a retired Air Force captain. Not retired. He's a former Air Force captain.
There you go.
And he'll be featured on the 31st. Is that right?
31st, July.
July. Okay. And you can join the conversation on the exchange. You got some questions or comments about what you're hearing here or questions for either of the people here in the studio. Let's hear them at 800-838-3760 over the phone. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So things were somewhat quiet, it sounds like, when you were first in the Air Force. But then you talk in the series about watching JFK talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis, John F. Kennedy, the president, talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis on TV. What did you think was going to happen, Larry?
Well, at the time, we deployed down to Florida, and I was intelligence the whole time I was in, and I've heard every joke about that, so don't bother. I thought we were going to war. I thought World War III.
Excuse me.
Allergy season. Mm-hmm. I remember terrified that my wife and young daughter at that time that were in one of the target areas within range of the nuclear weapons that were in Cuba, I was very seriously worried that we were at Armageddon. That scared the heck out of me.
Your wife and daughter were somewhere in the southeast, weren't they?
Yeah, South Carolina.
But given that you were in intelligence, though, I mean, how much were you telling your wife about what your own knowledge was and what your own concerns were?
Well, first of all, you couldn't. And then the second thing is you got to go back to in the early 60s. We don't have computers. We don't have tweets. We don't have cell phones. We don't have any of those things. So if you couldn't find a phone to put quarters in and call, or you write letters and you were prohibited from talking about it. Yeah. So.
Wow. So sitting on a lot of information that you could not share.
Yes.
So was there a time later when you could tell your wife about some of the things you knew? How when you're in intelligence, I mean, how long is the stuff classified? Or is it pretty much once it's in, it stays in your head and nobody else gets it unless requested?
You know, that's one of the – because after that, I ended up at Fort Hollabird, 6 months of training for human intelligence, and I went to Vietnam and spent a year over there, then stayed in the Pacific area and did intelligence planning and all that good stuff. And I think it's one of the it's very hard on family life, just the fact that you have two existences. You can't come home and share your day at the office. It's impossible to do that. And I remember one of the TDYs, that's temporary duty for, okay, we were stationed in the Pacific in Hawaii, and I got the call. You know, we had a call. I had a bag packed at all times and got deployed back to Southeast Asia for a little bit. And we were sitting there eating dinner, and I had just a little bit of time to go. And then I went. And some days later, I got redeployed back, and I'm sitting at the same table, eating the same kind of meal, And it's just these two realities. And I remember the mother of my children looking across the table at me and saying, "Oh, Larry, you think you can work in the dirt. No, you think you can play in the dirt and not get dirty, and you can't." And, of course, I denied the heck out of that at the time, but that thing has never left me. It was a very clear statement of there were two worlds I was playing in, and I couldn't share any of that with my family or my friends. It's a difficult dual life.
But not like working for the CIA. You could tell people you worked in intelligence, but that was about it. You couldn't provide any details of what you were dealing with, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that must be hard on you. Must have been hard on you.
I didn't recognize that it was hard at the time because I was so wrapped up. I mean, once the Vietnam thing kicked off and I was sent to Fort Holabird for 6 months of school in late 64 and then was deployed to Vietnam in 65, was involved in the planning back then. I came back in 66, 67, 68, 69, all immersed in war intelligence plannings. And then against my screaming wishes not to go, I was given a final 3-year tour at University of Washington ROTC during Kent State blow up and the student riots and everything. So really I had about an 8-year period where all my intelligence was consumed around a war effort or what was happening around the war. That took its toll.
But you had about as full an experience as it sounds like anybody could have had in the military in the 1960s. I mean, on campus, in Vietnam, involved in some way in the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, I didn't think about it at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the other thing about being young.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you got things ahead of you.
Yeah. You draft 18, 19-year-olds when there was a draft. You don't draft them for their intelligence. You don't draft them for their big picture ability. You draft them because they're young and stupid and invincible. And so when you're young like that, that seemed normal. I didn't know any other normal. That was my normal.
Mm. Jeff LeBeau, you already mentioned some of the details that you've learned, like the fact that 2/3 of the people in Vietnam were volunteers, 2/3 of the people in World War II were drafted. So there have been quite a few history lessons, it sounds like, for the people involved in making the program.
There certainly has, but it's really important to point out these are, I believe it's called social history. These are just the individuals who were there. They're not stories told through the filter of a politician or historian. So it's been really interesting, but Larry did touch on something that I noticed that runs through all of the vets that I've spoken to. The cost, the sacrifice is not just theirs, it's the families. No, it really is a huge sacrifice these men and women give when they take that oath.
Yeah, and I've heard it said many times lately in particular that the service member goes overseas, but the whole family goes to war.
I agree.
And has your jaw been on the floor a few times, Jeff, as you've listened to some of the stories?
Oh, yeah. In fact, this season there are some stories that just if I saw this in a movie, I would think, well, that's too incredible. That's beyond that those things. No, people wouldn't do that to each other. But at least in this case, they do these things to each other.
Jeff LeBeau produces My Story of Service for Southern Oregon Public TV based in Medford, and it's Monday nights through when?
It goes to August 26th.
Mm-hmm. And at what time on Monday nights?
9:00.
9:00 on Monday nights. And mm-hmm. So Larry Slessor in the studio with me will be featured on July 31st. Mm-hmm. You can join the conversation on the exchange if you have some other stories of your own you'd like to share, some questions of our guests. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The so-called, Larry, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was used as the reason for the U.S. to step up its presence in Vietnam. Do you remember seeing President Johnson talking about that?
Yeah, I was still stateside in South Carolina, and I watched his speech, and I just said to myself, uh-oh, that's not going to come out well.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think whether I was just being I might have been on my way to Fort Holabird, but it was right in that time, and I knew, well, this is going to get me.
Mm-hmm. You figured for sure you'd end up in Vietnam yourself.
Yeah.
How soon after Congress passed the resolution did you end up in Vietnam?
Well, they passed it in, what was it, August or so of 64, mm-hmm. and I immediately was in training for starting late August, September, October, November, December, January, February at Fort Holabird up in Maryland. And I knew at that time they had my end orders. I was going to Vietnam. So I was in that original big buildup of March of 1965.
Okay. So you went in that first bulge.
That first bulge, yeah. That's wow. That was the big bump. March, April 65. I went in March and stayed till a year, March 66.
So human intelligence as opposed to signals intelligence and some of the other varieties. So involving what generally?
Well, human intelligence is generally broken into four areas: collections, collation, evaluation, dissemination. And all the things that I were ever involved with, it was all collections efforts. And human intelligence is the recruitment and the use of other humans that have access to information that you want or something like that. And so that was my specialty.
Did you have to learn to speak Vietnamese?
You know, they were such a, there was thought about that. They were in such a hurry, this is what I deduce, is the buildup came so quickly that they were just pouring people in there as fast as they could. And I didn't go to Vietnamese language school and, picked up a little, which I've all lost, but we had good interpreters.
Let's take a call here. We have Paul in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Larry Sessler and Jeff LeBeau.
Good morning. I probably shouldn't talk about the time I had a first lieutenant order me to push a Jeep over a cliff, right?
Probably not. But go ahead.
In any event, well, I was a tanker, and he had a Jeep he hated, and it wound up junk. The question I've got has to do with the disconnect between what we see on the ground, what you're processing as an MI guy, and then what the leadership sees. Because it seems like again and again and again we get surprised, and again and again and again we're operating on false assumptions and false premises. I'll go ahead and take my answer off the air.
All right, thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it.
Well, I think he hit a nail on the head. And one of the things that emotionally was very difficult for me is I got to experience some on-the-ground stuff. And like one time I was assigned to an Army unit on a sweep and destroy because... And that's another whole story I won't get into. But unfortunately for my psychic, I was able to see what was going on the ground. I was able to kind of know what I was doing, and I had access to some of the upper plannings, and that was that wasn't good for me.
Yeah, I saw you in the piece talking about in 1967, realizing then that the war might be a lost cause. I mean, what does you're still a young guy at that point. What do you do with that information in your psyche?
You know, I couldn't process it at the time, and you are referring to that 67 event where that the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines, with the blessings of the CIA, we met in, I got sent TDY, and we met in MACV headquarters, and we had come to the agreement that we were going to start stay-behind operations in Vietnam, and we initiated stay-behind operations in 1967. Stay-behind operations are recruiting agents that will work for you after that area is denied you. So in 67, we were strongly suspicious that we were going to lose that war. So you're talking 1967, 68, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, six more years of insanity. And I'm part of the planning at that time to exit, if the possibility of an exit. That wasn't good for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. So Larry Sessler's story again on July 31st. How many different people profiled this season of My Story of Service, Jeff LeBeau?
We have seven Vietnam vets this mm-hmm. season. And we've also shot season three, which are made up of a variety of World War II and Korean veterans.
All right. My story of service on Southern Oregon Public TV, Mondays at 9, into the month of August. Larry Slessor again on the 31st. Larry, pleasure to meet you in person again.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Jeff.
And thank you, Jeff LeBeau, for coming in and bringing Larry along.